This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. On Christmas Day, 1926, the Mississippi River broke its levee system in 145 places. The rains were heavy that winter, and whole towns were swamped or washed away. 246 people were killed in the Delta region. And then 4 months later, more heavy rain. The levees in New Orleans broke. By May of 1927, 25,000 people had been displaced by the floods. Many of the people looking for higher ground were Delta blues musicians. They headed north and settled in Chicago, where they established a new kind of blues. Filmmaker Bill Morrison's been fascinated by those musicians and their journey for decades. He teamed up with jazz legend Bill Frisell on a new project called The Great Flood. The film combines found footage with Frisell's original composition. The Great Flood will screen with live music this weekend at Duke University. Bill Morrison and Bill Frisell join me now. Gentlemen, welcome to the State of Things. Good to talk with you.
Good to talk with you, Frank.
Hi.
Hello. and welcome to this area. You know, I know you've known each other for about 20 years ago. How did you two meet? Bill Morrison, maybe you tell the story.
I was working as a dishwasher in the Village Vanguard and, always looked forward to Bill coming down to play his week down there. And those weeks I would work the nights I was supposed to work, and I'd also come down the nights when I wasn't working. So he's a very approachable guy. We got to be friends, and eventually I was started using pre-recorded tracks of his on the short films I was making, and we developed our artistic relationship that way.
How about this film? What was it about this particular project that made you think this is right for original music by Bill?
Well, we had been on the lookout for a large-scale project that we would begin sort of from the ground up, where I wouldn't be taking pre-existing tracks of his. And, Bill's such a great, Americanologist in a way. He takes music from all over the world, but he also references the roots music from this country in so many different projects. So I knew that he could sort of distill the different influences and still make it sound like himself, that it would come out with a personal voice rather than as a survey of different music.
And walk us through, Bill Morrison, the process of making the film, The Great Flood.
I had worked on a couple different projects where I was coming across this flood footage, and I started noticing a lot of it was from 1927. And I guess I was at a dinner party in Louisiana where people started mentioning John Barry's Rising Tide, and it occurred to me that that would be the 27 flood would be the project I wanted to work with Bill. And from there, I went back and started looking at the footage that I had already accumulated, and going out. I had a researcher working with me, and we would Judith Ailey, and we would look for different archives, what they had, and then trying to build this whole thesis that the water came down and the people came up, looking for corresponding result footage of Chicago and urban areas.
And Bill Frisell, how much did you know about the Great Flood, and how much of an influence was that migration on you, or has it been in your career?
Well, I mean, I really didn't. When Bill Morrison came to me with this idea, I didn't really know. I guess I soon realized how much it had to do with so much. I started realizing all this songs that have been written about it, every time you hear something about a levee or this or that. And so, but I mean, the music, it's sort of that whole period of history, which is basically the 20th century, the events leading up to why this happened and the result of it happening it's a kind of a reflection of the music that I've spent my whole life trying to figure out. So it just seemed like the absolute perfect.
Did it recast for you any of the music that you had been playing all this time, understanding that this was actually the result of this particular? I mean, we know there was a migration, but this was a 18-month flood or a 6-month flood.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's oh boy. I mean, my whole, I'm 60 years old and – starting with my earliest, well, you know, when I really got fired up about playing an electric guitar when I was, or imagining it anyway, when I was 12 or 13 years old, and hearing the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and then one thing leads to another, and it's like, you know, with music, it's just been this ongoing, I'm moving outward, and then at the same time I'm looking, you know, I'm looking forward and I'm looking backwards. And, you know, it took me a long time to figure out that the Rolling Stones were, I didn't know that that was Muddy Waters music that they were playing. And so it's, I mean, it's been a, music has brought me to all these, it opens all these doors to knowledge for me, really. You know, it's how I learn about just about everything. And so this was just a gigantic opportunity to, and it's just been so inspiring. You know, that book, I just highly recommend that book, the John Barry book that Bill Morrison mentioned.
And what the title of that book again?
It's Rising Tide, or is it Tides? I'm not sure if it's Rising Tide or Rising Tides.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, it's sort of, it's such an amazing time. It really starts in things that were happening in the Civil War and the whole development of technology and engineering.
Well, Bill Morrison, tell us a little bit more about the flood and exactly what happened.
Well, I mean, it is, you know, as Bill says, there's a bunch of things that were leading up to it. And but just meteorologically, as you noted in your introductory remarks, there was a ton of rain coming down, you know, in the previous year, the fall, the winter, and the spring. And there was also a levees-only policy whereby, you know, there wasn't natural spill-offs. We had created this sort of channel out of the Mississippi River so that it would run, when there was high water, it would run faster and deeper, and, you know, instead of, you know, slowly going down. But it was an experiment that didn't work. When a huge, you know, mound of water like this flood came, where you had floods from, you know, leading from tributaries, Missouri, Ohio, Arkansas, White, you know, these big rivers were all, you know, converging upon the Mississippi. And like you said, there was 145 levee breaks. They dynamited Poydras Levee to, you know, save New Orleans sort of needlessly, because there were so many natural levee breaks at that point that by the time the water got down to New Orleans, it had dissipated. But, you know, I think a million people were displaced, and, you know, it covered, you know, an area of up to 100 miles, covering 30 feet of water. So we've never seen anything like it. You know, one of the tasks I sort of put to myself was to try to recreate what that would look like from the air. And I had a chance to work with a, you know, computer-generated imagery team from the University of Illinois, a visualization lab. And they, you know, I said, okay, if we can get the data, let's try to imagine what this valley would look like when it was flooded. So we went back and used the 1927 flood map and sort of use the data from NASA that's available now, and try to reconcile these two things.
What about the found footage? Where was that footage found? Who was taking those films at the time in 26 and 27?
Well, I mean, newsreel producers, newsreel companies were, this was great, you know, fodder for, you know, those little blips that you see before a feature, you know. So, and unlike an earthquake or a fire or something, a producer could call his cameraman to an area and the flood would still be going on, and you get these great abstract shots of people rowing boats past stop signs and things like that. So everybody could get it, and everybody wanted that kind of stuff. So there was a large amount of footage of the 27 flood. Not all of it was accessible for various reasons, but we're really happy with the stuff we were able to dig up.
Yeah, it's great. And you see on the storefronts on their signs, two-digit phone numbers. That's an interesting kind of a moment. Did you do much processing to the film itself? Obviously, you edited, but did you do any processing, and what kind of processing to make space for the music?
I guess, in a lot of cases, I'm looking for deteriorated or old footage. This is nitrate-based 35mm stock, so over the years it's decayed in its own way. And throughout my career, I've been fascinated with how those little blobs and imperfections in the image can correspond to music, when they're... And so that was one of the things I was looking for. We became sort of a reclamation project in that a lot of this, the outtakes of these newsreels hadn't been seen before. So, and they certainly hadn't been, most of it hadn't been transferred to HD before. So we were looking for film, actual films material, not duplication of video material. And, as far as processing, a lot of this stuff was shot at silent speed, 18 frames a second or 16 frames a second even. And it would appear to run fast if we were to play it back at 24 frames a second. So it's been slowed down, which of course also gives it a more ethereal and dreamlike quality.
Well, let's listen to some of the music right now from The Great Flood. That is just a tiny clip of the music, that original music by Bill Frisell. It goes with Bill Morrison's film, The Great Flood. It documents a flood in 1926 and 1927 that drove about 1 million people out of the Mississippi Delta up north and changed the music map in the United States forever. Bill Frisell, how did you go about writing the music? Were you looking at the original clips? Did you wait until Bill put it all together?
Well, for me, the process that we had, this amazing opportunity, I wanted to actually go to these places with Bill and with the band. And so I've never been able to really work on something in this way, where we, last spring, we had an engagement at the Village Vanguard with the band that's on that I had gotten together for this. And so we started just putting together some ideas of little melodies and things while we were playing in New York. And then from there, we went with Bill to New Orleans and traveled all up the river. It was right at the very beginning of May. It was this year. Is that right? This year. Yeah, just, a few months ago. Played in New Orleans, played in Mississippi, and drove all the way up, went through Clarksdale, Mississippi, Davenport, Iowa, St. Louis, up to Chicago. And it was really important for me that that I didn't just write the music on paper and have everybody read it, but that we would get some feeling for what just the atmosphere of the place and it's for me, you go somewhere and the air and the smell and the humidity and the sound of the way people talk. And so I wanted that to be a part of our, even if it was a fleeting kind of a memory.
But, you raise an interesting point there, and forgive me for interrupting, but as I think about what you just said, the idea that you're going to feel a landscape and feel the humanity that traipsed across that landscape, how much difference does it make to know something new about it, the fact that a million or so people brought their culture with them, driven out by a flood? because you're feeling something that you could feel and not have any intellectual understanding of. And then all of a sudden there's this new layer of information, and you bring that to the feeling, and now it's going to be, pretty soon it's going to be music.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I wanted it to be. You know, there's no way I can experience what those people experienced, or, you know, I didn't grow up there. I never picked cotton or nothing, but just to know that me and the band and the guys, when we look at the film, it'll trigger memories of this trip, at least, you know.
Yeah. Well, Bill Morrison, was that flood the birth of the Chicago blues, essentially?
Well, I mean, it's a simplification. It's a, you know, sort of the thesis we've been working with. But, you know, in the 27 flood, and first of all, just to as a corrective, I meant that a million people had lost their homes. I don't know if a million people all left the region, because some obviously settled, and this is crossing all racial and class boundaries. It's just the sheer number of people who were affected by the flood.
Displaced, yeah.
But the, you know, the African American populations in Chicago definitely spiked right then, 27 and 28, and you also see that people were making recordings in Chicago only a couple months later about, you know, the flood. And, you know, this is, you know, 27, so we don't have the electric guitar yet, but it's not far from coming. And, you know, what's interesting is that this is 27 is still a really fat time for the country. You know, it's before the Depression, and we're sort of this big powerhouse that, you know, is suddenly a huge world player, you know. And in a way, this flood exposed, you know, some of the, you know, faulty grounds that some of that wealth was built on, especially in the big plantations in the South. And so it was a democratizing force in some ways. And, you know, what you see happening in the North was people looking for new opportunities, and maybe their economic plight wasn't that much better, but it was a new beginning.
You've called the journey of those Delta musicians a spiritual one. Would you elaborate on that?
Wow. I don't know where you got that quote, but I say all kinds of things.
Well, do you think it was? I mean, was it? Did it change the way? Certainly, it changed their approach to the music. We can hear the two kinds. We can hear what happened in Kansas City and Chicago and what was going on in the Delta.
Certainly. I mean, and Bill's made the point that, you know, as people got to louder cities, they needed to plug in and be heard over the traffic and stuff. And I think that, you know, just also there's a number of different – it isn't a direct lineage from the Delta blues, in that jazz, of course, was prevalent. There was folk music. There was gospel. There was a bunch of different things that were coming into the cities at that time, and they were forming a new kind of music. And but, of course, the chord progressions are very similar with Delta blues and Chicago blues. And then you can extrapolate on into R&B and rock and roll. So, you know, you can never say this caused that, you know. Mm-hmm. But we're using a poetic license, and we're using this flood as sort of a prism to see the 20th century and some of the changes that happened.
Bill Morrison and Bill Frisell, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Frank.
Yeah, thank you.
Bill Morrison, a filmmaker, Bill Frisell, a musician. Their collaboration, The Great Flood, will be at Duke University this weekend. For ticket information, go to calendar.duke.edu. And for more on Bill and Bill, check out billfrisell.com. Frisell is spelled F-R-I-S-E-L-L. Coming up next, Kim Arrington gives us a preview of tonight's Jade City Musical and Theatrical Review. It's going to be at the Haw River Ballroom. The preview is here on The State of Things. Stay tuned.
Why don't you put on that white dress? You're at your best, and I have to say, I do. It's happening, love actually. Why don't you put on that white dress? You're at your best, and I have to say, I do. It's happening, love actually. why don't you put on that white dress? You're at your best, and I have to say, I do. It's happening. Love Actually.